Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Australian Politics Live. I'm Catherine Murphy, political editor of Guardian Australia, and I'm also the host of this show. Well, close watchers of politics will know that Parliament is about to resume next week for the first time since the federal election. I thought I would grab one of the first timers who are entering the bear pit next week to have a chat. Top of my pops was Helen Haynes, who is the member for Indi, replacing Cathy McGowan, a very high-profile independent that a lot of regular listeners will know quite well. Helen is sitting on the crossbench. She's not in a minority parliament, as Cathy McGowan was in the final stages of the last one. So I thought there were lots of things to talk about. Listen up. Helen, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much, Catherine.
Now, I just want to start with telling the listeners a bit about you, because you won the contest in Indi on the back of Cathy McGowan's period in the parliament. Not everybody watching the national campaign would have been looking at the contest minutely in Indi, although we all kind of were, really. So let's start with your background. Tell people who you were before this stage of your life.
Okay, so quintessentially, I'm a country girl. I grew up on a dairy farm in southwest Victoria and did what lots of dairy farming daughters did in those days, and that was take off without looking in the rear vision mirror of the car and went nursing. Mm-hmm. So I went to Melbourne and studied to become a nurse and then a midwife. And then I found myself looking to return to the country. And again, very traditionally, met my husband, who was an ag scientist up in northeast Victoria, and headed up into the northeast, where I thought I'd stay for 2 years, and I've been there for 33 years.
That happens in life.
It does. So essentially worked for, 30 plus years in the health sector, both clinically as a nurse and a midwife. And then my professional life took a turn when I decided I would go into research. I studied a master's in public health, and by virtue of doing that, undertook some work in Sweden, and subsequent to that ended up doing a PhD in Sweden, studying for a doctorate in medical science. And that led me then to continuing a career in rural health research based in Wangaratta, but working for the University of Melbourne in the Department of Rural Health. So in doing all of that, I really had no intention nor any glimpse in the future that I would be standing here now as the member for Indi in the 46th Parliament of Australia. Mm. So it's a most unexpected place for me to be.
So, but how did it come to pass? Because it's superficially, I could say something silly like, "What's an overqualified woman like you doing in the Parliament?" So how did it come to pass?
Yes.
How did this happen?
So, Catherine, I think really what I probably wasn't aware of was that in being a long-term health professional and being in rural health, that I had gradually become politicised, because health is highly political. Mm. And health is an area whereby we see what happens when policy is good, and we absolutely see what happens when policy is not so good. So I was forming some pretty strong views around how we might look at Australian health policy as I went along. Of course I was. But again, I didn't really think that that would take me to the Parliament of Australia. But what did happen in 2013 was my family, led by my husband, actually, who was one of the initial members of the Voices for Indi group down in northeast Victoria, and who started having conversations with other members of the community about how we might change the representation that we were getting at Indi. So I guess many of the listeners would know the story then, how Cathy McGowan in 2013 really barnstormed Canberra with the support of a large grassroots community movement. So I was part of that by virtue of being part of that family who was involved early on, and I campaigned for Cathy in both 2013 and 2016, like so many other ordinary citizens out on the ground. I donned the orange mm-hmm. when it doesn't suit my colouring at all.
Well, you and me both.
And did things that I'd never done before, like door knocking, like participating in kitchen table conversations, getting out on the street in community choirs, doing things that at the time were quite unusual and, dare I say, maybe even a little revolutionary for a rural seat. Mm. I was surprised how much I embraced that and how much my fellow citizens embraced that, and that feeling didn't go away. So then Cathy had two terms in the Parliament, and we were collectively really proud of what she achieved and who she was and how she went about her business. And so when it started to become obvious that Cathy may not run again for a third stint, then many people in the community were saying, well, what will we do next? And should we let this go and just hand the seat back to the usual players, or should we find someone else? So at that point, you know, a few people got in my ear and said, Helen, would you think about running? And I said, you know, I'd rather have hot needles poked through my eyeballs than be a politician. But yeah, you know, the earworm got in, and over a few months it took hold a little bit. And then again, this tremendous movement started to think about, well, if Cathy does retire, then we need a process to bring someone else forward. So again, in a way that I think we haven't seen in Australian political history, a deliberative forum was constructed, mm-hmm. and a method of consensus was drawn up to find a way for the community to invite someone to stand as a community-backed independent.
Mm. Imagine a community pre-selection, an actual one.
It is. It is an extraordinary thing, and I think it hasn't been explored in the way that it deserves, so I'm tremendously glad you're asking about it.
Yeah. Well, I want to get into that in a substantial fashion, how your movement organises, because I think people will be really interested in that. Mm. But obviously you became politicised, you tell me, because of your period in health, completely understandable. Mm. But for a country person, obviously you didn't go in the way that country people have done. I mean, I say this as someone who grew up in the country myself, that the general means where activism is expressed is by joining with the National Party. Mm. But you didn't do that, so why?
Mm. So for me, joining a political party never appealed to me. I didn't see in any of the major political parties, you know, an ideology or a way of going about expressing that ideology that spoke to me at all as an Australian, as a rural Australian, or as a woman. So the National Party is one of the major parties, and the National Party, as you say, Catherine, has been traditionally the voice of rural Australia. But in my mind, and I think in the minds of others in rural Australia, it didn't speak to me, and I don't think it's speaking to many others either. So from my perspective, it never entered my mind that I would join a political party. So this idea of the community getting together without having to have a membership to anything at all, just to share a set of common values and a sense that any one of us can take part in our democracy, provided we get organised and work together, that really appealed to me, because that's the way I've always gone about my life. And in healthcare, it's a very collaborative approach to getting things done. It's not about solo players, or it's not about a particular ideology. So that appealed to me. And I just found, I could do this. And seeing, I think, how Cathy went about her work, supported by this group of people, it made me realise that this democracy belongs to all of us, and any one of us, provided we have a set of strong values, can participate. So why not? And no, I was never at all attracted to join the National Party or any other party.
Okay, let's think about this parliamentary term. You've been in Canberra this week at New MP's School, New MP's Kindy, we call it.
Yeah.
You know, that would have been interesting, I imagine. Anyway, you might want to reflect on that. But looking forward to this parliamentary term, now, obviously your predecessor, Cathy McGowan, in the last phase of the last parliament was in a minority parliament. And we've seen a couple of those in recent years in Australia, but we don't have one as of now. Scott Morrison doesn't have a huge majority, but he is governing in majority. Mm. So there's a reasonably large crossbench in the lower house. How do you plan to project yourselves into debates in the chamber? Because, you know, Canberra is a ruthless numbers game. Numbers really determine your status in this strange pecking order, that this strange subculture that you've now entered, right? Mm. Numbers determine your status. Mm. So how do you propose to project yourself into debates?
Okay. So I think fundamentally I would start by saying that we've had a conversation in Australia that really is so fundamentally steeped in what power looks like. And I guess by reducing it in so many ways to numbers, we've eliminated, I think, what traditionally democracy is about, which is about representation. And while I accept, of course, because it's so obvious that this crossbench at this particular point in time doesn't have the power of numbers, we're still representatives of our communities, and we still have at our disposal all of the parliamentary tools. And I'm very determined that I will engage with this democracy in a really positive and optimistic and enthusiastic way. So you'll be hearing from me a lot with 90-second speeches, mm-hmm. with bringing petitions from my constituents to the House, with my participation in committee work, with questions in the House, and I think most fundamentally in the work that perhaps many people in Australia don't see because it's not reported, in good relationships across the floor with both the government and the opposition, to have policy discussions in Aussie's Cafe, to have influence, particularly in committee work, I think, Catherine, whereby so many committee reports ultimately are consensus reports, and eventually many of them find their way into policy and into legislation. So I believe I can make a really worthwhile contribution that way, which is outside of the numbers and power game that we traditionally associate with Australian politics. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And the other thing I'm determined to do, and many people say, well, you know, this is a waste of time, Helen, but I believe it is not a waste of time, and that's to put private members' bills. Again, they're dismissed, I think, in the current conversations about Australian politics. But I know for sure, I know that in the departments outside of the House, in the universities and halls of learning around the nation, people look at private members' bills, and some of those ideas eventually filter their way through. So I'll be working really hard through those parliamentary tools to have my voice heard, and that voice being the voice of the people I'm representing. And let's see what happens over the 46th Parliament. The numbers component may well change.
Yes, well, it did in the last Parliament.
Indeed, it did.
And in that vein, has Scott Morrison or senior players in the government, and Labor for that matter, reached out to you? I mean, I hate that expression. I'm sorry, it's the most dreadful expression. It just fell out of my mouth. but have they made contact with you?
I had some early contact, and I tell you something kind of embarrassing, actually.
Go for it.
So I had a couple of telephones during the election campaign. One was my own private number, and the other one was the campaign phone. And in between that period of being elected and the poll being declared, I went away for a few days and left one telephone at home. When I came back, a few missed calls, and one of them was from a senior member of the government.
Sure enough.
Anyway, I thought, gosh, he thinks this Helen Haynes is a pretty cool dude. She doesn't answer a telephone or respond to that message.
That's right. So playing it cool.
I know, yes. But it wasn't intended that way. But we played a bit of telephone tiggy, but ultimately haven't spoken with each other, actually. So while I have had a conversation with the leader of opposition business, I think is the term, to determine who I would be whipped by. Mm-hmm. And
Who will you be whipped by?
I know, what a fantastic thing. I'm so glad I knew what that meant. to get a voicemail that says, do you want to be whipped by us or them, was a pretty funny voicemail.
Welcome to Canberra.
I know. Yeah, so, I will be whipped by the opposition. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm following the precedent of Cathy, and my understanding is that's kind of usual for a crossbencher, mm-hmm. so I've gone with convention mm-hmm. on that one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, for sure. And, okay, so they're in the process of making contact with you, and you've been very clear about how you intend to approach the term. What about relationships on the crossbench? Because you're your own little caucus, really, aren't you? Is there any scope, do you think, for, because there's parliamentary caucuses and friendship groups and all sorts of things in this place, and a lot of relationships are sort of nurtured through those things, despite the fact that over the last 10 years we've been in a visceral conflict frame in Canberra. The whole joint hasn't completely gone mad. People do maintain friendships across party lines and all of that sort of stuff. Is there merit in a parliamentary caucus, crossbench caucus? Or are you all too different?
Look, I think it remains to be seen how alike and how different we are. Mm. So I've only had the briefest of meetings with Mr. Wilkie and Mr. Catter and Ms. Sharkey, and I've had 2 days to have some lovely conversations with Zali Steggall when we've both been in what you've called Polly's kinder.
Yes, kinder.
So I'm absolutely sure there's so many things that we do have in common. Like there were lots of things I had in common with people of all brands in parliamentary kinder. But look, I know what we are united on, and that is we want real action on climate change. And, you know, that's become a bit of a buzz term, real action on climate. What does it really mean?
No, it's not a buzz term. Not for this reporter.
No, I guess what I'm saying, real action. So defining, what do we mean by real action?
I know exactly what you mean, yes. Well, what do we mean by real action?
So certainly for me, as the member for Indi, what was really clear to me when I met with people up and down the highways and byways of my rural electorate was that our citizens are seeking a non-partisan approach to climate. They're seeking a conversation from the nation that is led by a desire to have changes in the way we think about how we generate our energy, how we share our energy. We want to see a climate fund that promotes research and technology and that reduces emissions. You know, our emissions are rising irrespective of what anyone wants to say about that. The reality is they are. And, you know, farmers, school kids, grandparents, people in their 30s, people in their 20s, I could not, if I was to try and work out who is the type that's serious about reducing emissions in my electorate, I couldn't give you a type. I'd say it's people of all shapes and sizes. So this is a real desire from Australians. And people told me time and time again, can we just get on with this? And in my electorate alone, community energy groups are prolific. Across Australia, there's 100 community energy groups operating. 11 of them are in Indi. Now, for years, I've heard from all sorts of pundits that Indi is a conservative electorate. And I would say to you, if it is a conservative electorate, and I actually now say I don't believe whatever is meant by conservative applies to Indi, but if you think that climate politics is something that belongs outside of conservatism, then I'd say have a look at Indi. 11 groups on the ground doing things.
Well, it's an interesting point because the recent election was a climate election, and there's all kinds of evidence that suggests that Australians were more concerned about climate in this cycle than they've been at any time since 2007, when we also saw a bit of a groundswell. But the sort of superficial analysis of the campaign is, well, it was a climate election and the climate lost. But does that look different from your home vantage point?
Completely different. I don't accept for one moment that the debate on climate is over. And I don't accept for one moment this notion of a mandate on climate. I don't think we can define that. I don't think, you know, we don't do exit polls with people in Australia to ask them what was the decisive factor for you and was it climate. You know, I don't think we have the evidence to say that at all. And I work with the evidence that I've got in my electorate, and that is people want to see good, strong climate policy that actually reduces emissions. And we know from global evidence, we know from leaders in other nations that there's really solid ways to do that, solid ways to transition without, you know, the world falling apart from an economical perspective. We know already that we have really good technology, but we do need more research and development dollars to ramp that up, to get the traction we need. And again, I would say, if you want to see action on climate at a micro level, come to Indi and have a look what's happening there, and go to other places in Australia too. But those people are frustrated because they want national policy, and you know, it's been well documented that major companies are not investing in traditional fossil fuel sources of energy. You know, the smart money is on renewables. So let's get on with it. And let's, you know, I think we need to stop backing ourselves into corners about whose ideology is right or wrong about this. I think all sides of politics now are being pretty clear in saying, you know, climate change is a real thing. So there's no doubt.
Better than the alternative, I guess.
Well, you know, it's just a no-brainer. So let's get on and do smart things. And as a regional Australian, I want to see economic development in regional Australia. And I see renewable energy as a really great opportunity for us. You know, we've got the space, we've got the sun, we've got the wind. In some places, we've got the water, you know, and we've got the smarts. We can do this. And, you know, let's jump on this boom. And this is a boom that the whole nation can share.
Sally Steggles said recently that she thinks that the renewable energy target should be extended beyond 2020. Do you think that as well? Or do you have a different view about that?
Well, I'm not sure about that. Mm. And in fact, when I finish meeting with you today, I'm off to meet with some climate scientists, actually. So my job as a parliamentarian and my job all throughout my professional career has been to assemble the very best evidence and talk to the experts. So I'm the first to say I am not an expert on climate science. Mm. So I'm going to the climate scientists to help me.
Old-fashioned notion.
To really help me. And I will listen to the experts and I will prosecute an argument that's based on solid evidence. So ask me that again after I've...
I think what I'll do, I'll get you and Zali back in a little while, once you've got your feet under the desk in the chamber and you've worked your way around the place. Just very quickly though, I do want to talk about organising in Indi, because this is a different mode of political organisation than exists certainly with the major parties. So how does that work? For example, I'll just throw one question at you. Now, I might have this wrong, but I believe Cathy's methodology was to survey the electorate, after budgets, after big announcements, just to try and see which way the constituents wanted to go. Is that right? And is that one methodology that you're going to continue, or how does it work?
Yeah, so that is right. So in the post-election phase, it's very important to Cathy, and it's very important to me to keep the conversation well and truly alive with the electorate. So it's not a conversation that we just have at election time. So to get feedback in a really mixed way from the electorate about the key issues. So Cathy did do things like post-budget tours and surveys and threw issues out to the electorate to say, what do you think about this? Get in touch with me. I'm really keen to do the same thing, but I'm keen to ramp it up even more and to find other ways of connecting with people who perhaps are not always the usual players in responding to surveys or turning up to focus groups, or not even focus groups, some kind of community meetings, I guess.
Yeah.
So absolutely I'll be doing that and picking up on the great work that Cathy's done. And I think, again, it'll be interesting to see from a longitudinal perspective how those methods work and how we can improve on them. So right now I've got a young bloke, smart young fella who was working in our campaign, and he's doing a body of work for me right now. I started off with a survey going out to the 1,700 supporters who took part in this campaign to get me elected. So getting feedback from them straight away about the campaign and how they want to now engage with my office. So again, I'm not supposing I know how it works. I'm asking the people to tell me how they want it to work.
Yeah, it's interesting. And that point you made a minute ago, I understand obviously communicating directly with your supporters, that's logical, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But you mentioned to me a minute ago that you're thinking about how you get to the people who are disengaged,
yes,
which has been such an important conversation post-election, because our failure professionally, journalists, pollsters, other things in this election cycle very obviously was failing to understand what politically disengaged voters, where they were and where they were likely to go. So you say you want to sort of build that up. Any specific ideas for how you do that?
Yeah, so again, starting with 1,700, one of the things that we said to our supporters throughout the campaign, once we essentially doubled the numbers of people from 2016 when Cathy last run, was to say to them, if you can each talk to 20 people that you don't normally talk with and find out what's going on with them, what are the key issues, and open a conversation with them, and then if they're, respectfully, if they're up for it, see if they would consider voting for me, for Helen, and if they wouldn't consider voting for me as their number one choice, would they think about voting for me as their number two choice? Mm-hmm. So those conversations happen throughout the election campaign, and what we're asking people to do again this time is to think about how we can engage with those people who weren't part of that Orange Army, as it's kind of colloquially known. So we'll be asking our people to help me to understand how to get to others. So each of those people live in communities right up and down the Indi electorate, and they interact with people in their workplace and in community groups and other ways. So I'm using the power of the people to help me understand how I can reach out beyond my own clear network of people. Then I guess there's other ways, and traditional ways that politicians have used forever, I suppose. Street corner, tables set up with umbrellas. But again, I know that I've never stopped at one of those. It'd be the last place I'd stop if I was doing my shopping on the high street. So I think this is a really interesting problem that we have, and one that needs to be solved. So my methodology is to start by asking the people on the ground, how can I do this, and see what answers they come back to me with.
That's a lovely place to start and finish. Thank you so much, Helen. It's been a great conversation.
Thanks, Catherine.
Well, thanks so much for listening. We really do appreciate it. Thank you to Hannah Izzard for production this week. You know the drill. Subscribe, share, tell your friends, all of that jazz. It helps us grow the podcast and make it viable. As I said at the top of the show, Parliament resumes next week. We'll be back with you then.